Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, at a time in America when there are mass deportations and tension with Mexico, former ambassador to Mexico Ken Salazar is delivering a message of unity and working more closely with our southern neighbor for economic prosperity. Salazar is calling for the ending of scapegoating immigrants, and he blames both parties for not being able to deliver on sensible immigration reform. Ambassador Salazar joins us to take your calls. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. For decades, Washington has promised to fix America's broken immigration system, yet bipartisan proposals repeatedly collapsed. The border remains a political battleground, and cooperation with Mexico is often reduced to arguments over enforcement, tariffs, and blame. Few people have confronted these issues from as many vantage points as Ken Salazar. He first served as Colorado's Attorney General, then U.S. Senator, President Barack Obama's Interior Secretary, and most recently, President Joe Biden's ambassador to Mexico. Salazar calls that diplomatic assignment the most difficult job of his career, placing him between a complicated Mexican government and what he describes as a deeply dysfunctional politics that we have in Washington, D.C. In his new memoir, Borderlands, My Fight for an Inclusive America, Salazar draws on his public service, his family's generational deep roots in the Southwest. He argues that border security and immigration reform cannot be achieved through slogans or enforcement alone. They require expanded legal pathways, a modernized asylum system, and a lasting deep partnership among the United States, Mexico, and Canada. Ken Salazar joins us now on The Source, and welcome to The Source, Ambassador Salazar.
Thank you, David Martin. It's great to be here in San Antonio, Texas, on The Source.
Well, it's great to have you here, and our phone lines are open. If you have a question for Ambassador Salazar, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Ambassador Salazar, Ken, as you told me to call you, you're here in San Antonio at a critical time in Texas. We're about to see if there's going to be a tectonic shift in Texas politics. And the reason that might happen is because what's happening with the Latino vote. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and why this is so important, and what this could mean for the Latino as a voting bloc into the future, and why that is critical.
Thank you, David. So for me, it's an honor to be here. I came in last night because we had a celebration at San Antonio at the Mission, at the missions, the World Heritage Site. And as I was speaking to elected officials and many who came out to celebrate it as a World Heritage Site, I was comparing that to what's happening in the United States today. In those days, when a secretary we nominated the missions as a World Heritage Site, is about telling the story of all of America. We did it with Japanese Americans, with women, with lots of people. And today, what we are seeing is this complete effort on the part of this president and the people who believe in him to basically erase all of that history. And so we are at this pivotal time in the history of the United States, and the Latino population and their voting power is going to speak very loudly in these November elections and in 2028. So it's an exciting time. You know, I love Texas. So many people that I know in every one of the cities and rural counties of this state. I said last night, all the eyes of Texas are on Texas for sure. But it's really the eyes of America and the eyes of the world. Because what happens here in this November is going to determine, in my view, the future of the United States.
The Latino vote is the largest and the fastest growing independent vote in America. They voted hard for Donald Trump in his most previous presidential election. We're seeing lots of polling that shows that they're dissatisfied with how he has been running the economy and the government, and also with the cruelty of the mass deportation. But also we know that the Latino vote does favor border security, and that they do want to have an immigration system that is fair and that works, which we do not have now. Is that something that will Washington hear those messages?
They have to. I think the system has been broken for so long. I remember well, as I write in Borderlands, the history that we engaged in with President Bush, who was strongly supportive of a new relationship with Mexico, fixing the border, comprehensive immigration reform, dealing with the Dreamers, all that. That was then. And what happened is we lost in the House of We lost in the House of Representatives because Dennis Hastert, the Republican Speaker of the House, decided then that keeping the border in crisis, demonizing migrants, was the low-hanging fruit for the Republican Party. And that's what's defined the politics of the border and migration ever since then. And we saw it on full display with Trump 1. We saw it now as a result of the 2024 election. And it's on full display again now in these elections of 2026.
So you say that the border, it's a geographic location, but it's more than that. It's a cultural identity. It's it's also an economic powerhouse. What is missed when we're talking about the border in the United States?
What's missed is just the dynamic, positive communities that live along the border. 2,000 miles of border, 1,200 miles of that is Texas and Mexico. Laredo, Nuevo Laredo, Dos Laredos. I hear, David, from somebody that you married somebody from down there.
Yeah.
Let me just say, there's a whole effort that should be underway to create a much better relationship between those two communities because families go back and forth. The commerce goes back and forth. 40% of all the commerce that comes into America from Mexico comes across those bridges in Laredo. And so we're the number one trading partners in the history of humanity. And so we need to do better to recognize the great things on the border, but we also need to recognize the reality. That's the violence in places like Tamaulipas across La Frontera Chica in Mexico. And we need to address those issues. So border security is something that is paramount, and Democrats have to come to the table with the solutions. And I lay out those solutions that I believe need to be adopted, and they could be adopted if we had the political courage here in this country. Immediately. So I'm hopeful that with a political earthquake that I hope we see coming this November, that the United States and our politicians will have the courage to do the right thing.
So tell me a solution that you would want to see implemented.
So the solution first on the economic front, we have the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement. We are the number one trading partners in the world. Here in North America. That's back and forth under this president. Tariffs one day, tariffs off the other day. What's happening with the cost of food here in the United States, the cost of diesel. You know, I'm a rancher, farmer, and I know how we're suffering in rural America because of what's happening with these erratic trade policies. So one part of this is trade. You need to improve that agreement, and it should have provisions in there relating to a number of matters, including how we plan the border and how both Mexico and the United States need to invest in technology. We need to invest in security along that border. Those ought to be part of USMCA. Second, you need to address security. You can't have security in the United States or in Mexico unless I say it in Spanish, seguridad compartida, seguridad compartida. We need to make sure that we're addressing the challenge of the cartels and violence and drugs, as well as arms which flow across the border, military-style arms that kill a lot of people in Mexico. And so all those matters are easily part of a national, international security treaty between the U.S. and Mexico.
Going to take a break here. We'll be back with more with Ken Salazar. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davis. When we think about borders, we frequently think about how that's where two nations are split apart, but actually it's also where two nations come together. And we need to think about the borders in both ways. And that's an approach that we hear from Ken Salazar. He is a former U.S. ambassador to Mexico, former U.S. senator, former Secretary of the Interior, and he's with us now in the studio. His book is Borderlands, My Fight for an Inclusive America. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Robert on the phones. And Robert, you're on The Source with Ken Salazar.
Thank you for having me on here. And my question is for Mr. Salazar. Kudos, you made my day so happy to know that a Latino with that much knowledge and everything is on the air and to push us Latinos forward. But my question is, and this is, let's skip that, but my question is going to be for Mr. Salazar. What is your take on the relationship in between Mexico and the U.S.? Because to be quite frank, honest, Claudia Sheinbaum is nobody to mess with. And Trump actually kind of pushed his weight on her. And I saw a lot of videos of her where she basically laughed at Trump and said, who do you think you are coming in my country telling me how to run my country? What is your take of what direction now are we going with Mexico and the U.S. neighboring one another?
Robert, thank you for your question. Ambassador Salazar.
So, Robert, thank you for the question. First, let me say I'm very optimistic about the future of the U.S.-Mexico relationship because of the people on both sides of the border, 130 million Mexicans, 340 million Americans, and our destiny is inextricably linked together. That's a forever thing. We are in a moment of crisis because you have an erratic presidency here in the United States who, instead of bringing our continent together, our relationship with Mexico to a better place, is effectively trying to destroy it through his approach on foreign policy. So as you comment on Claudia Sheinbaum, I think important for us to say, hey, congratulations to Mexico and its people, the first woman ever elected as president in North America. We celebrate that. Now, there's a reality that there are huge issues in Mexico, including security, including judicial elections, a whole host of things that need to be grappled with. But they need to come together in Mexico. The United States needs to come together here, too. But we're going to have to need a change in presidency, in the presidency here in the United States, in order to be able to create this durable, transformative, legal relationship between the United States and Mexico. Robert, we've done it some in commerce. We're the number one trading partners, as I said earlier. We need to do it in security as well. But we need to do it in a bicultural and bi-educational way. There are only a few thousand students from Mexico that study in the U.S. universities. Yet we have over 350,000 Chinese. Same thing is true for Americans studying in the great universities of Mexico. We can do a lot more to bring the people of the two countries together. But part of that, and this is something that both here in the United States as well in Mexico, we need to change the understanding of Mexican and Mexican-Americans here in the United States through the eyes of the Mexican government. And that includes President Sheinbaum and others. And we need to change the understanding of people here in the United States about the reality and history of Mexico. And I could point out, may I have one example here? I don't [S2] Sure. [S1] Want to go too long. But we did a celebration, 200 years, Robert, of our relationship between the U.S. and Mexico diplomatically. I invited from here in San Antonio, Texas, little Joey La Familia. he went out of Texas for our Independence Day celebration. And I would ask the then Mexican ambassador, have you heard of little Joe y La Familia, Tex-Mex? They had not. And so there is a huge appetite and need for lifting up the understanding by the Mexican people in general and the Mexican government about the reality of Mexican Americans and our history here in the U.S. And the same thing with respect to the United States and Mexico. 32 states and Mexico, wonderful people, great culture, 130 million. We need to know Mexico better than we know Mexico.
Real quickly on this question, and then I'm going to get to Enrique on the phones, but Joe Biden was the first president to go to Mexico in a very long time. We can see that the United States does not really value the relationship with Mexico as it should. And as the number one trading partner, we share the massive border. We share an incredible history. Shouldn't the United States see Mexico as a tier one relationship?
Absolutely. That's what needs to change. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat who wants to be president of this United States or you're a Republican, that foreign policy paradigm in the United States has got to change. We need to have Mexico as a tier one relationship. It's a 2,000-mile border, 130 million people. How can you make it a third-class relationship, a forgotten relationship, which is basically what's happened? But that's really rooted in some history here. If you think from the end of the Mexican-American War, 1848, until 1947, 99 years passed before President of the United States went to Mexico City. 99 years. You think about these times, this President of the United States has never been as president to Mexico City. Yet, how many times have they walked the halls of Buckingham Palace or gone to other places around the world? That's because those are priority relationships, and the relationship to the South, to the Americas, is seen as, at best, probably a third-class relationship.
Caller, let's go to Enrique. Enrique, you're on The Source with Ken Salazar.
Oh, hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, not too long ago, there was a lot of emphasis placed on maquiladoras. These were these American-owned plants put along the Mexican border in Mexico to fight both illegal entries into the country and also to strengthen the economy of Mexico. And I was wondering, I haven't heard hardly anything about that program in quite a while. And I was just wondering, has that been done away with?
All right, Enrique, thank you for the question. Ambassador Salazar.
Enrique, it's a great, great question. The integration of our economies is better than it has ever been. In fact, it's a relationship that is the envy of a lot of the world. If you think about avocados and strawberries and blueberries, what feeds the United States, much of that comes from Mexico, right here to San Antonio and every one of the 50 states. If you think about the pickups we drive, GM and their plant in Silao, much of that is manufactured.
Toyota here in San Antonio.
Toyota in San Antonio, you know, so that it's automotive. It is agriculture.
One reason why we have Toyota in San Antonio is because we're able to do parts manufacturing in Mexico and do assembly here in San Antonio.
So it is working on both sides of the border. The assembly here in San Antonio creates lots of jobs here, good paying jobs. It's what's lifted up places in Mexico as well. And it's not just on the border. You know, people, maquiladoras, Enrique, sometimes are seen as just on the border. But if you go down to Toluca, right outside of Mexico City, you have one of the most advanced Ford plants in the world. They manufacture the Mach 4, all electric, right outside of Mexico City, assembled with parts from the United States and vice versa. So anyway, it has been a great success. And getting better, because one of the things the USMCA did is it included provisions there in workers' rights to reform the unions of Mexico, and the workers in Mexico are now having an opportunity to have their own voice. And so it's really a great relationship on the economic commercial front, Enrique.
But is that, is that relationship in danger because of what's happening now with Trump?
It is in what I would call a crisis, but it's a short-term crisis. It's a crisis that's been created by the erratic policies of this president on tariffs. On one day it's USMCA is on, one day he's going to reject it, and you just never know where we're going. But over time, because you have such a great number of people, of consumers, of demand in the United States and in Mexico, you're going to continue to have an integrated relationship. But it's going to take a change in leadership, a change in the politics, both in the White House as well as in the Congress.
So after this election on November 3rd, the Latino voting bloc could become the dominant swing bloc of voters in the United States. So how can that be capitalized in order to deliver for this group who they have? It's not a monolithic group, but they have many needs, including improved public education, better wages, ending the cruelty of mass deportation, all sorts of better services for small businesses. How do they deliver that? Who can be the voice for this bloc?
I think it's a Latino community as a whole that needs to understand that reality. They're searching for common sense solutions. You know, they're no different than any other American, no different than rural Texans or people in the big cities of San Antonio or Houston. What people want is they want security for themselves and for their family. Two, they want jobs that create opportunity and security for themselves and for their family. They want to not be at the whim of these endless wars that we see in Iran and other places.
We see how many Latinos serve.
We see how many Latinos have died. You know, here in San Antonio, I often go and visit the commemorations of the men and women who received the Medal of Honor, a lot of Mexican Americans. And when I come to Texas and I think about Corpus Christi, I think about the founding of the American GI Forum in Corpus Christi in 1948, because they wouldn't allow Mexican Americans to be buried in the cemeteries because they were Mexican American. So a lot has happened, a lot has to happen for the Latino community to have its voice heard, and it's going to do that. That's why this upcoming election here in Texas is so important, and everybody's watching Texas.
The subtitle of your book, you know, Borderlands, My Fight for an Inclusive America. Why is it so hard to have an inclusive America? Why do we got to fight for that?
Because we're searching for who we are. Right now, the project of erasure underway in this country is trying to erase our history and our identity and the greatness of the diversity that really makes us uniquely who we are as Americans. We need to celebrate who we are. We need to celebrate you if you are a Mexican American, as am I. I have 4 centuries of my family history in New Mexico and Colorado and in Texas. So that history is not going to be erased, and I'm not going anywhere. And the 50 million Mexican Americans who live in the United States in all 50 states aren't going anywhere either. And there are 70 million Latinos. So we need to understand that for the economic prosperity of the United States and the democracy of the United States, the Latino community is going to be at the table. And you have great people here in Texas, like Gina Hinojosa, who are making that case. They're about representing everybody, not just Latinos, as they should be. But at the end of the day, it's about uniting America across the board.
So you're traveling across Texas and across the country, particularly in the Southwest, talking about your book. What are you hearing? What is your big takeaway from what you're talking to everyday people?
You know, a lot of people are afraid. When I talk to people, see them at churches, Our Lady of Guadalupe, different places, they're concerned about what's going to happen with their families, families that have been here for a long time, and whether because of ICE, all of a sudden, their families are going to be broken apart and disappearing. You know, I say it often. You know, when we were working with President Bush, John McCain, Ted Kennedy, we would talk about the 10, 11 million people who are undocumented in this country. And I would make the argument on the floor of the Senate that we needed to bring these people out of the shadows of fear into the sunlight of our society. Today, all of these people are living in the shadows of death because they're being killed in places like Houston, Texas, in Maine, and other places around the country. So the current policies of this president are basically bringing in a time of fear in the U.S. that I have never seen before.
Ken Salazar, former Colorado Attorney General, U.S. Senator, President Barack Obama's Interior Secretary, most recently President Joe Biden's Ambassador to Mexico. His new book is Borderlands, My Fight for an Inclusive America. Thank you so much for coming on The Source today.
Thank you so much, and hats off to Texas Public Radio, to you, David, and to The Source. I love Texas.
Thank you. That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.